Okay, thank you very much, Domio, and good evening, everybody. So, getting my screen set up here. By way of introduction to those of you who may not know me, I am Bob from Tigard, a town not far from the Zendo. Like Katie Larcell last week, I have been a longtime Unitarian Universalist, and I sang bass. Bass baritone in the big choir downtown for over 20 years. However, I once asked a senior minister why we at the Unitarian Church didn't have more Buddhist literature or sutras in our UU services. We had all of these things from other traditions and faiths. Why not more Buddhist thought? I think he could sense I was deeply interested in Buddhism, and he told me I should go see Domio in Beaverton, who might have the answers I was looking for. The rest, as they say, is history. I signed up for the mailing list and was able to visit in the early days of Brightway a few times. After I finally retired, I was able to devote more and more of my time and energy to Brightway and the Sangha. I took Jukai in 2018. And I've presented precepts a couple of times since then. I have learned a great deal in the past few years, and I hope I can bring something of value to you this evening. Tonight, I present the precept of do not steal, honor the gift not yet given. In the realm of the unattainable Dharma, holding no thought of gain is the precept of not stealing. Ehe Dogen, our Zen founding master, interprets it this way: the self and the things of the world are just as they are. The mind and its object are one. The gateway to enlightenment stands open wide. This precept is about being satisfied with what I have. Another way you could translate this is not taking what's not given freely. I found yet another way to say it. I will refrain from stealing, since it is my true wish to give up all attachments. How could I willingly grasp after anything which is not freely given? As in all the precepts, these appear as simple, easy to say and understand ways of being. We learn these ideas from our parents, our playground buddies, from our first teachers to our last. We hear it and learn it in so many ways. And there is a word now in more common use from the German. The word is Grift. It means the same as take in German, which is the same as stealing in many ways. I want to present to you for your consideration the words from our own website. The Precepts in Everyday Life, Precept Number 2, Not Stealing by Lorna Simons. I was raised by people, she says, who set a very high value on honesty. I remember that when I was about 5 years old, I stole a candy bar from a local store. When asked where I'd gotten it, I had no money, of course. I fessed up, and my father took me by the hand and made me go back to the store and tell them what I'd done and pay them for the candy. Very humiliating to my pride, and an object lesson. So, on the sort of grosser, obvious levels, stealing isn't a big issue for me, she wrote. But there is one area where my intention to be honest collides with my compulsions. I live in a house where my food supply is separate from the family's, and as far as they're concerned, I'm free to take food from their supply if I need to. I replace it later. But when I am in the grip of my food compulsion, there are certain foods that I snitch secretly and guiltily consume in private, and I don't care if I use them up. The feeling around that is furtiveness, shame, and a certain urgency. all words taken from the Dharma Rain Precept Talks in 2013. So one action item could be to do my best not to do that. Next, I'm reflecting on a couple of other phrases from the Kyoju Kaimon. Holding no thought of gain is the precept of not stealing. And the idea that you can steal time or attention, invade others' space, and make demands beyond what they can reasonably give or is appropriate for me to ask for. Also, the strand of misusing authority to get privilege or power. This may not be directly related, but like many people, I have a tendency to spend a fair amount of time thinking of things I'd like to have and using a lot of thought energy planning for it or wishing for it or feeling bad that I don't have, whatever it is. So a second action item could be to become more aware of when I'm doing that and try to let go of it. This one doesn't seem quite as straightforward to me as not killing did for some reason. So I'll be interested to work on it. So I found another teacher, someone I think Domio might actually know. This is from Deborah Sado from the Empty Fields Zendo of our lineage. There are many themes, she writes, to unfold in the study of the precepts, but I want to bring out this very profound aspect unique to Buddhist ethics that points to the reliance on awakened mind functioning among complex causes and conditions of the world. The precept we talked about this week is the one that says, do not steal, honor the gift not yet given. Its commentary from Bodhidharma and Dogen reads, in the realm of the unattainable Dharma, holding no thought of gain is the precept of not stealing. The self and the things of the world are just as they are. The mind and its object are one. The gateway to enlightenment stands open wide. This commentary is asking us to reflect on the mind that steals, that is, the mind that sees objects separate from self and moves from a sense of lack. Although we may not be robbing banks, we all partake of this deluded mind. When we want to steal some time, some credit for something we didn't do, something perhaps that wasn't freely given to us, or so-called petty theft of small objects from the workplace. Practicing this precept is not about starting a criminal investigation, oh my goodness, but simply honestly noticing our deep sense of lack and opening up to the awkward, original mind's natural contentedness and appreciation for the abundance of what is already given. Air, food, friendship, a flower, the sun, the rain. Zazen facilitates keeping these precepts by simply sitting with things as they are, not pushing, pulling, stealing, or attacking. We must bring compassion to the stealing mind and, once noticed, let go of self versus other. Open the awareness to the truth that nothing can really be gained, nothing really lost, and move into action from that place, uniquely meeting the circumstances that are before us. The precepts are not only a state of mind, but also an activity in the world. Here I present a translation I like, borrowed with permission from Cloud in Water Zen Center, that uses language showing precept activity in the world, rather than the rules that punish and are clouded by guilt and self-condemnation. This way of precepts is about practicing with joy in a way that we are most true to our own heart. And Sato continues, three collective pure precepts. With purity of heart, I vow to do no harm. With purity of heart, I vow to do good. With purity of heart, I vow to free all beings. the first of the 10 momentous prohibitory precepts, recognizing that I am not separate from all that is, I take up the way of non-killing. The second one that I'm talking about tonight is being satisfied with what I have, I take up the way of non-stealing. So we learned that there are a few ways to view this and the other precepts. I think of the different views as if I were looking at a house from the outside. None of the outside walls look exactly like any of the others. Yet, they are each a view of the same house. They are inseparable from it. The house is the same house with each view. What can we steal? Are we sure about these? We can steal things, ideas, I think so, skills, artistic creations, money, valuables. How about behaviors, customs, words, patterns of musical notes, patterns of words and phrases? Does there have to be intent to be considered a stealing, a taking? Can it be an accident? Not intentional? Can the charge or crime of stealing be passed down to descendants? And then what about fraud? Is creating a fraudulent emotional attachment in someone stealing their heart away? What if they allow this theft? Not necessarily the heart one, but just the theft in general, as in overcharging for a good or service. Is that stealing or taking? Can you take away another person's self-respect? How about their humanity? How about their culture? I circle back, excuse me. I circle back to think on the synonyms of stealing. Taking, grifting, snatching, lifting, five-finger discount, embezzlement. Can you supply any others? Let's take a moment for a just 2-minute meditation. If I could have John, are you equipped with a bell that you can give us a 2-minute bell in 2 minutes?
Sure.
Okay. Let's spend 2 minutes thinking on this. Think of each of these terms that I just listed: stealing, taking, grifting, snatching, lifting, five-finger discount, embezzlement, and feel deep down inside how you feel emotionally when you think of each one. Which one makes you feel the worst? Which one the least uneasy? The least uneasy? Are there any that shouldn't be on the list? Are there others that should be? And we'll come back in 2 minutes. Would anybody like to tell me which one makes you feel the worst, or tell the Sangha which one makes you feel the worst?
One that makes me feel worse, but when you were talking about synonyms and giving different examples, let me turn my video on. Candy, as a minority, the examples that you gave made me think about appropriation and expropriation without compensation, and those in particular make me feel pretty bad.
Yes, thank you. That's a good point. Yes.
I don't mean to pry, But seriously, but can you describe pretty bad in a little bit more detail? Candy. I'm sure.
Maybe kind of like the opposite of, so we were talking about the refuges and how, like, when we take refuge in them as the source and as the past, present, right? And so for me, those particular type of takings, because of their source, often being rooted in discrimination or lack of racism, because of the past of those did, because those still happen now, or that's been lack of reparation, like it ram it it's kind of like, it's different from if somebody comes inside of my house and steals my book or steals my car. Like, there's no, like, I don't know what the source is of that. It could be that they're addicted to drugs or something. I actually know I have had one car stolen in the past, but still, it's not like a repeated ongoing thing. And it's not something that, like, is constantly happening. So that's why those particular, it's almost like the exact opposite of, like, how we take refuge. It makes me feel bad to like that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I also thought about the word exploitation, and that made me feel bad because I feel like that is a kind of stealing that I end up participating in. I'm complicit, but it's not necessarily something I am doing directly. It's I'm part of a bigger system that is exploitative.
Leah?
Jeff was first.
I can only see certain people with their hands up.
Jeff.
Okay.
Jeff, go ahead.
Sure, you bet. Thank you so much for your talk, Bob. It's really got me thinking about a lot of things. I think just the word stealing just feels very direct and concrete to me, and speaks to me. A couple other words I found myself thinking about are cheating and exploitation. I think they can manifest in various ways of stealing, taking opportunity, taking re resources that are not yours to have that need to be shared. Those are a couple of additional thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Denny, gotta bring your microphone on, please.
Did Leah get a chance? Was she after?
Thank
She
you,
dropped
Denny.
her.
Thank you, Denny. Yeah, I was thinking about the word usurpation, which you didn't mention, but it means if you take somebody's land away. And then I thought, oh, well, how about colonialism? How about the use of the word property at all? This is an area that I think about a lot.
So that brings up an interesting point. That is there a power dynamic that is wound into all of this? Such as, if I go to a restaurant and I have a spaghetti dinner, am I misappropriating the Italian culture?
Yeah, I think about that too, but I was really referring to the land that we supposedly own, like property when we buy a property, and we're complicit in this society and then like the whole town of Beaverton and everybody, and we're all complicit because we this used to be or is still Hallelujah land. So, and all across the United States, I mean, you could actually take it even further and go, well, how much land are people on that actually used to belong to other people? And we just took it. So that's where I was going with that.
Okay, thank you. Who else had their hand up?
Jenny did.
Oh, Denny, yes, please.
Oh, now I'm feeling as though I should save my question to last because it is a little off to the side. So I apologize, Bob, if I'm taking things off track a little bit, but.
Oh, please go ahead.
Okay. You know, when you were talking, this hadn't occurred to me before, but when we're asked, and I understand this completely, to start from a place where we are satisfied with what we have, and to have no gaining idea, that works very well for people like us and other people who have the basics, the daily basics of what is needed to nurture ourselves and our children or other people who depend upon us. But I don't think I'm incorrect in saying that most of the people on this planet, that isn't the case. They don't have enough food for themselves or for their young children or whatever else might be considered a basic medical care, clothing, water, clean water. So what do you do with that when it comes to stealing? What if you're reduced to stealing a loaf of bread so you can give your children something to eat? Is there any anything that speaks to that when you're studying the precepts?
I haven't run across anything that speaks to that directly, and it's a good question. I don't have an answer for you, Denny. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right. I just wanted to put it out there in case someone had something to add. I can just try to, you know, explore it on my own too, see what I can come up with, and I'll bring it back.
Let's hear from Jinryu. I think she's
Jade.
Oh, I'm sorry, I can't.
Thank you. I just wanted to expand on that. And it's an especially spicy question if you consider it's not just stealing a loaf of bread to feed your kids, it's holding the thought of gaining a loaf of bread that has not been given to you. Just the thought of it. Anyway, I feel like that. Oh no, this occurred to me too, and I'm glad you brought it up. And yeah, I wanted to expand on that.
Thank you, Jade. Yes.
If Yoli comes back, she has something to ask as well. She had to take a call outside. But what I'm thinking of, and I don't know that I am right, and my teacher is right behind me. But to Denny's specific point as to what, is there anything in the precepts that speaks to this? And I don't know if it's necessarily in the precepts. I don't know where it stems from, except maybe the Lotus Sutra, or I don't know where. Anyway. But we have the concept of skillful means. And the Buddha used this in stories on us to pull us into the path, his understanding of the way and the way to live. And what it means is, in a very practical, straightforward sense, it is, in order to maintain a particular precept, you can break another. And let us not forget that the overarching idea surrounding the precepts is compassion. So compassion for my hungry children trumps everything. I can't speak to the question Jade brought up, and I think that's a good one, except that I think the kind of people that Denny might be referring to probably don't worry about the thought too much. They're really worried about feeding their kids. So that's my thought.
Thank you.
That's perfect. And the only thing that I would add is that we can break the precepts out of compassion, but that there is still karma generated. So, and that is unfortunate. So somebody who is driven to steal because they are deprived, they still face karmic repercussions from stealing. Maybe not the same as if they were stealing just because they're greedy, but they still face some karmic repercussions, which means the whole situation is unfortunate, right? So, yeah.
Thank you.
So do we have another person who wants to talk, ask a question?
Yes, Kate, maybe?
Rachel,
sorry.
Rachel and then Judith here in the Zendo.
Okay.
Rachel.
I'm thinking,
yes.
Oops.
Go ahead, Rachel.
Sorry. When I'm thinking about the word stealing, and I'm thinking about all of its all of the words that are put together to make the other words, I wish I could say the word. It makes me think of how many different kinds of stealing there is to describe it at all. And it kind of makes me feel kind of bad about it, because it's like saying this kind of stealing is okay, but this one's worse, but this one's also worse. And at the end of the day, stealing is just stealing. And I think we need to have, like what Domio was saying, is compassion, or Janeiro was saying, is like compassion for it all is hard sometimes, because we feel the injustice of it. We want to have it too, or we want to share it with others. And sometimes there's just not enough to go around. How can you make enough to go around when there's so little of it? And I don't know, it just makes me feel kind of sad. It kind of makes me feel kind of like, why so many words to describe a concept? You know, it's kind of sad.
Hit it, Judah.
Oh, I just have a question for a change. What do you think about the way we take land away from animals, never mind other human beings and colonialism, but the fact that we are usurping the land? There's a lot of press right now about cougars attacking humans up and down the West Coast. And they're doing that I'm guessing, because they have nowhere else to hunt. And I just want to know what you think about that. That's a form of taking their hunting areas away from them.
So, Judith, you're asking me?
Yeah.
Okay. Just want to make sure I understood the focus. So my answer is predicated on the understanding that I come from Central Washington State, where cougars were and have been a real issue. When we push civilization into the primordial forest, there are now state parks up there where they have signs saying, be aware of where your children are because they can be attacked by cougars. And you're right, the cougars come down and hunt because they're hungry. And they're hungry because there is a lack of small animal food up in that area. And there's a lack of small animal food because of the drought, is my understanding. So climate change has precipitated an increase in interactions between the cougars and humans, especially when humans are, you know, willy-nilly running through the woods that the cougars are used to being in charge of. Sort of the reverse of what they had back in Pennsylvania, where they outlawed shooting of deer because they were running out of deer, and now they are overrun with deer because there's no natural predators anymore either. So we've got a lot of work to do and not very many answers, unfortunately. So is it Alice next? I think so.
Yep. On the discussion of karma, just kind of want to consider for a second the karmic consequences for someone who's had things stolen from them. I would imagine that it would breed a lot of distrust, anger, and further, even more, replicate more and more breaking of precepts that they would want to do to protect themselves in the future, potentially. So, you know, karma comes like a butterfly effect that's not traceable back to its origin. And I consider the precepts as a method of reducing the karma that you produce. That's all.
Thank you. Yoli, I think you were in suspension for a while.
Never. Okay. That's what I was
talking about. Excellent timing.
Sorry, I'm on call, so I gotta
understood. Understood.
So one of the things that I was thinking about is grifting. You know, everything in stealing seems like it is still personal, but I feel like embezzling, do you ever really know people when you steal from somebody? That doesn't seem personal. But to me, when I hear the word grifting, I feel like it's an intentional plan to cause harm to somebody and take something.
Yes.
And what comes to mind was today I was watching something and the news people said, oh, Donald Trump's newest grift, which is he's selling Bibles now with, you know, Donald Trump is endorsing Bibles, which this is true, but which to me is a true grift because you are tugging at these religious people's heartstrings by saying, look, I'm selling Bibles, buy a Bible from me because my Bible is the best Bible, which is exactly what he said in the commercial. So that's what it comes to mind is like this intentional plan to hurt somebody emotionally and in many other ways. But anyways, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Yoli. And let's have Daryl up next.
I just wanted to say with the last answer or question about the compassionate stealing, there's a book I read called Opening the Hand of Thought, and it reminded me of this story about how the Zen master took in the monk, and basically he told him not to go in, don't touch the flower that was locked up. And basically after the after practicing for a long time, the monks were starving and they didn't have like nothing to eat and stuff. So this one main monk disobeyed his master and opened the cabinet and fed the monks. He made something and fed the monks, even though he was compassionate towards the other hungry monks. He disobeyed his master, and so he was kicked out of the temple. But he had to earn his way of I want to say donations and doing the food until his master took him back. There's more to it, but I know we're running out of time a little bit. So if you want to find more of it, it's called Opening the Hand of Thought, and I thought I'd add on to that.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Grant.
Is that Grant?
Yes.
Oh, I haven't seen you in person before.
Hello. So I had an open-ended question. Just how does stealing lead to the concept of compassion, but also some justice? And it's open on the question how these two concepts relate to stealing, and just for some information and background. So I appreciate the discussion topic tonight.
I'm sorry, I'm having interference. I'm not sure where it's coming from.
Okay, can you hear me now?
I'm muted.
I can hear you now. Continue your question.
Okay, so it's pretty much opening the question between the stealing and compassion and also karmic justice. And just for some background, 4 months ago, while I was in New Jersey, I had to deal with almost like a family soap opera situation where after my father's death, my aunt, my father's sister pretty much stole 200K from my family. And so and with that, there's pretty much, I went the legal route, there's no repercussions from her actions. And for me, stealing is really just a violation of pretty much your property, your trust, your sense of goodness of the world, and also just doing unnecessary harm. And so I guess with that recent event in my life, my kind of belief in the sense of like karmic justice has kind of been shaken, but also it's just a struggle finding compassion just for, I guess, myself for not being able to resolve this situation in the way that I would, but then also trying to find compassion also for my aunt and her son, which I guess in the Christian terms, like turn the other cheek, which I don't think I can really do, but just want to leave it up for you.
Wow, I'm sorry for your condition and your loss. That has got to hurt.
Yeah.
Got hurt a great deal. These precepts are all intertwined. They all go together. And the fact that karma exists and is part of this doesn't necessarily mean that karma will be activated or will be retribution in Christian terms. I don't sense that karma has that as part of its existence. Perhaps Domio can correct me on that if I'm wrong, but this is the precepts to me are a way to deal with the world and a way to be in the world. And they don't provide solutions to current problems, but they're there to prevent future problems. And so there is some comfort in the structure and the understandings of the precepts, but it's not a one-shot fix everything like so much of some religions have, is a do this and everything will be better. There's a lot that you have to do in Buddhism to have things get better. I hope that answers your question.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
That was beautiful, Bob. Great way to put it. I think it, for me, I feel like as we get converted to the precepts over time, right, as our conviction grows, that this isn't just a list of things we shouldn't do. This is a list of things that if you do them, it's going to hurt. It's going to lead to negative consequences. Like, you just, okay, now I believe it. And when we find that out for ourselves, we just, it's got to be true for the other people. Even though it looks like they got away with something or might have gotten away with something, right? Like, imagining somebody who's killed somebody and gotten away with it and no one has ever found out. What is the state of that person's mind and heart for the rest of their life? They did not get away with it totally. I mean, in one sense they might have, but I don't know. So it's not like, counting on the retribution, but it's understanding, like, you cannot break these things without repercussions. And that's where I get the compassion. When I think about Trump, for instance, I feel great compassion, because I think this person is suffering incredibly. They would not act like that if they were not suffering intensely. Not to get off the Anyway, Ashley's had her hand up for a while.
Thank you, Domio. Ashley?
Hi, everybody. I really enjoyed your talk, Bob, and I wrote down something that you said that I found really interesting, that the precept is about noticing our deep sense of lack, and then that it's important that we pay attention to what is already given, such as rain, flowers, the sun, friends. And I found that so beautiful. But then I was thinking about how often we steal from the earth, and how we don't even engage in a dialogue with, like, the finite resources, how we take so much water and so much energy, land, space, how we, like, consume food without thinking about where it comes from. And that just had me thinking about all the karmic consequences of that, and how there are, like, companies and stuff taking from the earth at just such a extreme rate, thinking that there are no repercussions from their stealing, and yet all of us are, we do collectively still face the karmic repercussions of that. And I was just thinking about my own water use and how I should probably take shorter showers so I steal less from the earth. Thank you.
Thank you. I think Brian is next.
Well, very good talk. I didn't catch who mentioned the butterfly effect, but that really stuck home with me tonight. The fact that I'm always concerned about, doing wrong and how I'll feel karmatically about the whole thing, but it's how the effect to everybody else, how you hurt somebody or the environment or current or the future effect, whether it's environmentally or something, there's an effect for everything that we do that's contrary to the precepts, and how that person that you hurt indirectly, unintentionally even, how they may have to suffer their own karma because of attachment and other things that they're going to feel bad from, not just from your effect, but just it's the butterfly effect, how it affects everybody and the environment and the people. And what she said really, I don't know who said it, but I really, really felt that is a good word to affect all the precepts we look at. If anything we do that's not right, there's going to be a butterfly effect. Thank you.
So Brian, if I could I have you explain for everyone benefit the butterfly effect in sort of simple terms?
You drop a pebble in the water, or you drop something in the water. You put some radioactive stuff in the water in Japan, and it shows up on the Vancouver coast. I mean, it goes everywhere. It's like a rippling effect that you never know the consequences of your actions. You kill this bird, and that bird might have actually, you know, been the food for somebody else or for another animal. Like, it's just a one thing after another. It just keeps going and going and going. So especially if you do something knowing that you are doing something wrong, such as fraud or something, and the other family, you know, are going to starve to death, or they're going to, you know, the person's going to lose their job, their company's going to go out under. It just keeps rippling and rippling and rippling. And the only way I feel that you can counteract that is just to try to do the best that you can, and don't do things that are bad. Otherwise, your karma, yes, you have to suffer it, whether it's now or another life or whether or not you really will suffer it. But what about the karma to the other person? That it's a ripple effect that they, in fact, will do something to retaliate, not because of what we did, but they may have to go and steal something in order to get the food that you stole their money from. So it just becomes a on and on and on. And I think that's really a sad, like, you know, vengeance is not the answer is a good expression, right? Because if you do vengeance, it's gonna go on and on and on.
So does doing good follow the same as that?
I believe if you do good, that it is the law of attraction. It attracts to you, but attracts to other people and all that type of stuff. So if you at least do good, then maybe the other person, even for the fact that they smile because they've enjoyed what you just did, gives them a positive, you know, karma. But, you know, if you say something, like I might say something tonight to offend somebody, and I apologize because basically you're going to feel bad, and that's not my intention. It's not intentional. It's not, when you do it intentionally, yes, you know what you're doing. But it's when it happens unintentionally, that is so sad.
Wow. Thank you so much, Brian. Appreciate the explanation. Very good. Is there anybody else?
You had her hand up for a minute.
I can't. I'm sorry, I can't see. I got to switch over that direction. Okay. Oh, Rachel?
So with all of this thought and conversation, it's making me question, how do we live in harmony if we're stealing and things? Like, how do we find a way to live with both nature, with each other, and other things like that without rubbing elbows, but like jostling each other or something like that?
You know, to me, Rachel, that is life's great question. How do you live in harmony with the world and everybody in it? And that's how we navigate the world, so that we are not unduly jostling everybody and everything in it. It's a good question. It's what we, I think, as humans, that's what we face every day, almost every moment.
So we all are confronted with feeling we're not enough, or we don't have enough. And then there's this aspiration to gain something that's missing. Mm-hmm. And I think that you can get to a place where you're at ease with yourself, and you feel you are enough. Not that you don't have room to grow or to learn more or to feel more. And yet at the same time, out of that feeling of enoughness, you can move out into the world with your aspirations and your dreams. And that isn't necessarily for your own gain, because you already have enough. So you're not going out into the world to get something, to aggrandize your own state of being. And you can move out into the world with those aspirations and dreams. Like, we're all complicit in the fact that we have all these refugees that are starving, but we're complicit just because we use too much electricity and water, and we waste food, and so that's just a truth, you know. But I do think that if I can find my own sense and presence of having enough, I can still have dreams and aspirations of maybe trying to change this and alleviate it in some way. Yeah, that's all I can say.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, it looks like it's about that time. So if we'd like to all make gassho, we offer the merit of this class meeting on the precepts. We offer this merit to all, so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, Bob.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you, Bob.